I remember reading, I have it here, I think it was right when you wrapped it, you said, "I'm probably more excited to see this movie than any movie I've ever done.
Yeah.
I've never done better work as an actor in a movie and have never been challenged as much as I was in this film." So I take it you've seen the film now, and what do you think?
I have. You know, I'm still such an actress, so I'm kind of my own worst critic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it feels so great, and then you see it, and I could think of 8,000 things that I would have liked to have done different. But it's all in the magic of editing, too, so I can't, you know, in other people's performances. So I think the film is great. You know, I've never done anything like it. It's so fun, and, you know, it's one of those movies. It kind of reminds me of, like I love Death Proof, and I felt like when I went to see Death Proof, it was the same thing with Kurt Russell. It was like, I was cheering for him, and I kind of,
mm-hmm.
I'm not comparing myself to Kurt Russell by any means, because he's, I mean, sick, but it's just one of those movies that you get to cheer for, and I think I've been in the movies that I've done before, kind of like, you know, they're just hardcore, so this is fun and exciting, and it's just totally different than anything that I've ever done.
Yeah, and you could feel that.
And I mean,
that.
I look crazy. It's like I'm such a mess from, like, the opening scene. And I was talking to Adam Green about it last night. Like, Mary Beth is just sort of, like, the straight character out of everyone. So as fun as it is, and, as, you know, it's like I'm sort of, like, I'm not the funny one. There's all the other characters are what sort of season the soup.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of help carry it through. So I'm in, like I said, I'm in such a, like, disarray, such a wreck from the opening scene that I bothered myself, like I was annoying myself, because I'm just so hardcore through the whole thing. But the last 20 minutes, I think, will knock your socks off. So,
the thing about Adam's movies is they really welcome audience participation. And so when you sit in an audience and watch Hatchet or even Frozen, I mean,
yeah,
you can feel it's visceral in the audience, that feeling. So when you watched it, did you watch it with an audience, and what was their reaction?
I did. I saw it for the first time at Fright Fest in the UK. So I saw it with about 1,200 people for the first time.
Wow.
And, yeah, so I can't. I'm excited to see it again tomorrow night because we're in Austin at the Fantastic Fest together right now. So it's kind of like I can't wait to see it again so then I can sort of – I'm going to need to see it like 5 more times to be able to like kind of step out of it because I'm looking at – you know, stupid actress things like performance and, I wish I would have been more of that than that, you know? So it's like, I hope I get to a point soon where I can just kind of get out of it and watch it. But I think, you know, the premiere is coming up in LA on Tuesday and I'm going with like 10 of my friends. So I'm super excited to see it with them and just to have that, you know, like, I don't know. It's just cool. It's just fun, everybody.
And you're actually going to be attending screenings, the opening weekend. Are you in New York attending screenings?
I am, yeah. I'm in New York, which, you know, I'm a Queens girl. I was born in Long Island. I grew up in Queens. So so it's going to be fun to go back home. And all my friends are already hitting me up on Facebook, like, you're going to be in New York, you're going to be in New York, you're going to be in New York. So, yes, everybody, I'm going to be in New York. So come to the theaters.
So tell me about this movie. What was the challenge for you? You said it was the most challenging project you've done. What was that challenge?
You know, well, I think that it's like – everything else that I've done, and for most people, what's so great about Adam Green is that this movie picks up in literally the same frame that the first one ended.
Oh,
so it's not, cool. You know, it's not like, oh, 5 years later, another group of tourists go back into the swamp. That's not what this is. It literally is like, I mean, you know, it's the same frame. So, so I had to start the movie in that disarray. Like I had to start as Mary Beth at the end and then go from there. Where normally I get to sort of start being cute and being having fun scenes and, you know, being feisty girl, and then something goes wrong somewhere throughout the movie, and then I'm in hell for like the last 15, 20 minutes before I die. And that's not the case in this movie. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm in the water from, you know, from the first frame. So it was just like a whole, I mean, every single day was me having to be just intense and exhausted and you know, going back into the swamp to seek revenge on the guy who just killed, you know, my father and my brother. I Mary Beth just comes from seeing them dead. So having to carry that with me the entire movie was a little bit more emotionally challenging and heavier for a longer period of time than I'm used to. I'm used to, like, you know, a week's worth of sort of that, and this was mm-hmm. 3 weeks of that. So it was definitely a bit trying. And, you know, having to sort of hang and brawl with Tony Todd and with Kane Hodder and all these huge guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just giants next to me. So to keep my own, that's for sure. I always had to be on point.
Well, what always amazes me about great performances in the horror genre is that they're probably the most emotional kind of performances that you're likely to see in
yeah.
film. And how do you get to that place as an actress?
You know, I'm amazed sometimes, to be honest, that it's as easy for me to do it as it is. It just sort of happens, and like Adam will be like, it's crazy, like you're not one of those actors that's like, I need a minute, and you don't go off into your corner and hyperventilate. Like you say action, it just sort of comes. I don't know if that's me being an emotional wreck in my real life. So easy for me to be a lunatic on film, and then I mean, after you see Hatchet, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm scared of her. I'm single. I don't know if anyone's going to ever want to date me after this movie. I don't know. It's just sort of been something that I just sort of put myself in that situation, you know, and I think that's sort of like everything that I've done has been sort of me and how I would act.
Mm-hmm.
If it was actually happening to me, I think there's me in most of my I try never to come in and play somebody, you know, so it's exhausting, and I think it's what's weird is that as I get older, I'm finding that it's a little bit harder for me to come off of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like when I was a kid, it was really easy to sort of, I'd cry and scream and it would pour out of me, and then they'd take cut and I'd be giggling and laughing and running around with everybody. And it takes me a little bit longer to get out of it now, but it's just as easy, if not easier, to get into it now. So it's hormones. I'm a girl. I don't know. It's like, it just happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've done. Oh, go ahead, Jerry.
Do you still? I know early on that you had said that you wanted to do horror films your whole life.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way?
Careful what you wish for.
No, but I mean, in one sense, is it something that you could see doing the rest of your life? Do you find new things in the genre that excite you? I mean, obviously, working with Adam Green,
yeah.
Working with him, yeah, I would imagine.
I mean, it's sort of, you know, after I did the last Halloween, I sort of made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to do anything that I had done before. And because there's so many movies that come my way that are just, you know, and I mean, I need to pay my mortgage just like everybody else does.
Right.
But and sometimes you have to just do movies because there's no work. It's hard. It's like,
right.
I'm not, you know, there's no middle class anymore in real life and in the movies. There just isn't, as far as being an actor. Like, you're either struggling and not making any money, or you're a
right.
movie star. It's like, there's just doesn't seem like there's any in between. So
that's
trying
true.
To find that, you know, that in between. And I'm fortunate enough to be a movie star in the horror genre. And I'm definitely not gonna throw that away. And I think that it's, like you said, it's, this work is so hard. And I don't think anybody, and I think we're just now kind of starting to get credit, and these movies are finally being seen for what they are and how hard they are to really make and how hard they are to make good.
Yeah.
And on a shoestring budget, you know, because everyone knows you can make a horror movie for like nothing, but for some reason these comedies, they're making them for, you know, $50 million. I don't quite understand where that money goes other than to like some actors, you know, because it's, I don't know how these some of these directors that I've worked with have managed to pull off
mm-hmm.
these movies. I mean, it's like, you know, Stakeland is another movie that I have at the festival here that's going to be coming out next year, and that movie cost hardly anything to make, and it is so stunning. And it looked like a $20 million budget movie, and I give that to filmmakers. And so I do want to – I've adopted this title of, like, Scream Queen, which I kind of had a little bit when I was a kid, and then it went away when I was doing other things, and I sort of found myself back in this. And it's this little community of the most amazing fans, the most amazing people that are making these movies, dedicated, devoted, hardcore, and to be honest, pretty rad. And I'm pretty excited to be part of that group. And I keep working with the same people over and over and over again. So it's kind of like in between movies. I think of it as like summer camp or like school, where you know you're in school and then you're off for the summer, and then you get to go back to school and you're so excited because you know that on day one, like, you're going to see all your old friends.
Right.
And you're kind of nervous and kind of excited. You don't know what the new year is going to hold, and that's kind of how I feel. So I've been getting all of these, you know, scripts, and I thought, okay, I just don't want to do another slasher movie. I just don't want to do it. I don't want to play a high school kid that's getting chased around. I'm 33. It's time for me to kind of change it up a little bit. And
yeah.
I don't think anybody wants to see it. And it's easy for me to do that, to play that girl. So, you know, I think coming off of Halloween, doing Fear Clinic, I got to work with Robert Englund, which I'd always wanted to do, and Kane, which I've been friends with Kane, but never worked with Kane Hodder before. So got to do that. Never done anything for the internet before. Wanted to, you know, I'd known FearNet for so many years and wanted to kind of, you know, have that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So did that. Then went on to do, what did I do after that? Went on to do, I believe it was Stakeland. So I did, you know, a vampire movie, which I hadn't done before. And it's set in this, like, amazing, you know, just, I was pregnant and playing older and this really soft, sweet, nurturing caretaker, you know, of the guys. I've always been, like, the bad girl. So it was nice to take a break from that for a little bit. And then going on to do Hatchet, which, you know, sort of this badass, hardcore, like, you know, gun-trotting, you know, just chick that is going in with all these big brooding dudes to kick some ass. And
yeah.
I wasn't the victim. So I'm like, yes, I'm not the victim anymore. And then, you know, Night of the Living Dead, like another, like, now I get to do a zombie movie. So just sort of trying to find things that I haven't done before that make me want to do my work the night before and not just show up. And that's kind of what I think I've been doing the last year. So as long as I just stick to it, I think I could be in this forever.
Well, in Stakeland, it just won an audience award at Toronto.
Yeah, it won an audience choice award for The Midnight Madness up against some, you know, big ballers. So it is as good as I think it is. That's always nice to know. It's like, yes, you like it too.
Yeah, that's always refreshing, always.
Yeah, because you never know. You're like, I love it because I'm biased? Is it because I know everyone in it and I made it? Or is it really as good as I think it is? And I think that the movies that I've been doing lately are really as good as I think they are, if not better than I think they are.
Well, that's interesting, and that brings up another question I want to ask you about. I mean, you've done a lot of movies, and you know, you're invested in your piece of the process, which is your performance.
Yeah.
Can you feel as you're doing it whether or not it is working?
No, never, because sometimes I think it's amazing, and I see it, and I'm like, oh my God. Uh-oh. You know, it's all in the power of editing. And it's just like auditions. It's sometimes I walk out of an audition and I'm like, oh, my God, that was awesome. It totally felt right, and that was so good. And then they're like, yeah, no, it's not going any further. You know, they didn't respond to you. Or there's times where I'm like, oh, my God, that was so bad. Or one more. Can I just get one more? Like, I just want to do it one more time. And they're like, no, trust me, that was amazing. And you kind of feel like, no, I could do it better. But I think you always feel like you could do something better. It's like the first time you go on a date or you call somebody on the phone, or I'm sure after I hang up with this interview, I'm going to think of 20,000 things that I would have said that would have been, I would have felt better about, or things that I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. So you always think that things could be better or different than they are. But there are definitely those moments where you're like, wow, I didn't see that in the script. I didn't see that happening. I didn't see it being that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of organically happens. I mean, I'm in Hatchet, like I'm so out of my mind through most of it that I couldn't tell. I just knew that I was exhausted every day and stuff was coming out of me, out of my, you know, that sounds horrible. stuff was happening emotionally, but you know, the script is really campy and really fun. And it's sometimes you read it and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to make that real? You know, how is that going to read? Because I don't have an accent. I've never had an accent in a movie before. how is that going to, how am I going to play that? And then you get on set and you're like, oh my God, okay, I'm working with Tony Todd and I'm not having to play anything. And it's just, I'm hysterical. And I didn't even think that this scene was going to get me there. And all of a sudden I'm crying and I can't stop. Uh-oh. But you know what? It works. So Adam just lets it roll and I let it roll and hope that it just comes across how it felt.
Well, every actor is different, but it sounds like the process, you have to be confident. I mean, confident to know that you can do it. But at the same time, there is insecurity involved in the process, I would imagine. So it seems like it would be a little schizophrenic.
Yes. And it's true. I mean, even like, you know, this festival that I'm at right now, I've never had a film in a film festival before. And I have two here, and they're both, they're like polar opposites, especially characters. Like Mary Beth and Belle couldn't be any more opposite from each other. So I'm kind of feeling like this is going to be really cool to see if I really do have multiple personality disorder or if I just can show up and trust my director and let the last one go and move on to the next project and sort of see what happens. And because it's, normally I've been playing kind of the same girl for so long, and then, which is sort of who I am. And then I've had to sort of not be that anymore and sort of find different parts of myself in all of these girls. And I think as I'm getting older, I'm finding a little bit more vulnerability, which I think is starting to read, even in these characters that are kind of badass, because that's just, I'm 5 feet tall, you know, and I think I have this, like, I don't know if it's Napoleon complex or like this, like, feisty, I don't know what it is, but I always get cast as that. And as I'm getting older, I'm finding when I watch myself that there's this, and it may just be because of me, there's this like vulnerability, this a bit softer, a bit more open, a bit, just a bit more available. And I think that it's sort of reading. So it's kind of fun for me to watch as I'm changing, the girls that I'm playing are changing. I don't know what's happening, if that's making me change or if I'm creating that. So it's interesting. Sort of actors are a bit schizophrenic, I think. But it's also the process, you know.
I think that's good for the long term. I mean, it's just there should be a change in anything that you do. There should be an evolution, and I think that's great because you can come back and say, "Wow, there's a lot of growth, and each part isn't the same." And at the end of the day, that's what you want. That's what you want as an actor or a director.
I mean, it's
part.
Scary. Yeah, it's like, you know, I for example, like if you think of like Adam Sandler, you know, we're totally just talking shop right now, but if you think of Adam Sandler, I think like Punch Drunk Love, I thought he was amazing.
Yeah.
And he can
absolutely
do anything. It's like comedians can do anything. Comedy is so hard. If you do comedy, can do anything. And it's like I keep seeing these, you know, actors take a chance and do these movies that they're brilliant in. And then no one gives them any credit for it. And then they have to go back to doing what they're known for, their shtick, their thing, their character.
Right.
And it just kills me because they're so much better than that. And they're brilliant at what they do. But it's like, I'm the one that gets so excited to go and see someone that takes a chance trying something that isn't safe. And it's hard. It's really hard because those movies don't make any money and they get ripped and they get ripped apart. Even like, you know, I'm reading some reviews here and there about my performance as Mary Beth, and it's hard because I'm replacing somebody, and so that automatically is like, they're comparing me to her, which we couldn't be any more opposite, and it's something that it's a type of role that I haven't done before, and I think that, you know, people don't quite know how to feel about it, so I just have kind of had to stop reading everything and go, I'm confident, and you know, it's all about the fans. Like if they love it, then that's really all that matters to me, and I feel like the fans are already so awesome at supporting the work that I do, even when I don't think it's that great sometimes. They keep saying, like, oh, my God, I love that movie, or you were so good in that. And I'm like, ooh, really? Oh, I wish I could have gone back. So, you know, I've yet to find a fan that's come up and been like, you suck, I hate you. I mean, listen, I can go on IMDb and I can find 5,000 of them, but...
Well, the internet is an insane asylum for cowards.
Right.
So.
It's true.
Well, the horror fans, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the horror fans because they are so invested and have so much passion and love for the genre and the people that populate it. And, of course, you're at Fantastic Fest now, so you're bumping into a lot of fans. Do you have a kind of a most memorable experience with a fan?
You know, there are so many that – I'm always amazed that, you know, if I do a festival or go to a convention promoting something or signing or, you know, whatever it is, but there's so many people that, like, I'm always on the other side of the table and someone walks up and if they're shaking or, it's always weird, like, if I take a picture with somebody and they don't want to quite touch me, they don't want to put their arm around me, I'm always like, come on, it's okay, like, I'm not going to bite, it's fine, it's fine. Or they're like, oh, my God, you're my idol, or, oh, my God, I grew up watching you, and they're nervous and shaking, and I always see myself as just, this is what I do, this is my job, and I'm like, and that's, I think, why I have such amazing fans and why I do have the fans that I have is because I'm kind of one of them. I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan of horror movies. I'm the chick that geeks out. I just geeked out when I saw Kelly LeBrock at Dragon Con. I mean, I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, on the other side. So I know it's like, it's because I grew up watching her. And I feel like maybe that's sort of, you know, the way the fans think of me, like, I grew up with you, and, you know, and I feel like most of my diehard fans are people that are my age, you know, like, I kind of bust a lot of guys' chops, because they're like, I used to have such a crush on you, and I was, you used to, screw you, when I was 10, you perv, so it's like, you know, I kind of have that, like, I don't know, I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm one of them, so I think I have moments with every single fan that are memorable to me, and I'm so grateful that I've been able to stick with it and ride over that, you know, that child actor bullshit, and continue to have the support throughout the years that I wasn't working, and know that things are changing and blowing up, and that you guys are still coming and you still want to talk to me. So I'm grateful for all those moments I have with my fans.
We're thrilled to have the opportunity to talk to you. We're crazy about you, and let's do
thanks,
it,
guys.
Yeah, we're
let's do
honor,
it again.
Real honor.
For sure. Are you? Where are you? Are you in New York?
It's odd. This is an internet podcast. I mean, it's heard for anyone that
everywhere.
Has a computer.
Everywhere. Yeah.
But I'm in Florida, and Jerry is in Maryland, and we've never met, and we've co-hosted this show together. 4 years almost.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Why don't you guys travel? What the hell?
I know. We
Who's afraid to fly? One of you is afraid to fly?
No. Nothing like that.
I'm not crazy.
You've
about
never
it.
Met.
I would
do you
fly.
Know what you look like? Do you know what each other looks
yeah.
like?
Yeah,
yes, we do. Trust me. It's not... We know
I'm just kidding.
once we meet, the magic is gone, I'm afraid.
I'm going to have to set you guys up on a date or something.
Right.
More power to you, Danielle.
All right,
well,
Danielle.
Well, thanks for talking to me, and I hope you guys enjoy Hatchet and Stakeland, and I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I do.
In 2007, director Adam Green brought us Hatchet, the return of the great American slasher and the birth of horror's newest villain, Victor Crowley. Old school American horror with buckets and buckets and buckets of blood. But American theaters saw a censored version of the film. Now, in 2010, Victor Crowley returns to the big screen in the ultimate slasher sequel, Hatchet 2. And for the first time in over 25 years, a horror film is coming to major cinemas uncensored. Uncut. Uncompromised.
Oh my God!
Gore. Like you've never seen in the theater before. More deaths. More carnage. More Crowley. Adam Green's Hatchet 2.
I just recently saw Frozen, and that is one of the most intense movies I've ever seen.
Thank you.
It was terrific. And when you're writing a movie, when you're writing Frozen, and the same thing applies to Hatchet 2, in the writing process, do you ever consider, man, maybe I shouldn't write this, because how the heck am I going to be able to do it?
Well, Frozen was like its own different beast. And I mean, what I've sort of tried to do with my work is always do something completely different. which is part of the fun of it. Like, you can't even compare something like Frozen to Hatchet or Hatchet 2 or even Spiral. I mean, they're very, very different movies.
Right.
But with Frozen, when I came up with the idea, that was what was most exciting. It was such a challenge because I would tell the guys at Aeriscope what the idea is, and they're like, dude, it's great. It'll be a good short. I'm like, no, there's a whole movie here, man. And they're like, how? What are you going to do? You got three people in a chair. Like, what are you going to do? And that's been the joy of the movie, is a lot of people think that when they go to see it. They're like, how are they going to pull this off? And Buried is another great example. I don't know if you've seen that yet. I was actually really pissed because I met Rodrigo Cortez when we screened together at Sundance. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you're the movie with three people in a chair. I'm like, yep. And he's like, I got a guy in a box. I was like, fuck you, man. it goes back to, for me, one of my biggest influences is Hitchcock, and Lifeboat is just amazing. And you got a bunch of people on a boat, and that's it. Right. Yet he still was able to keep the tension up, and that's all in character and dialogue and writing. And
right.
I think with Frozen, the fact that these are three very real people, and it's a very open book, I think, to my own life. All the stories they tell, everything that happens is all true stories from my own life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what endears people to them, and they act like real people would act. There was never somebody on that chair who suddenly was like a gymnast and knew how to do something, or was,
right.
Oh, I know, I'm a doctor and I know about frostbite. You know, nobody wants to see that movie. So I was really excited that it worked and that it's been affecting people the way it has.
Yeah. So when you sit down to write Hatchet 2, I mean, the first one, really popular with fans, and when you write it, do you feel kind of a responsibility to those fans?
Definitely. The first Hatchet was very much a selfish movie where I got a group of my friends together and we made the type of movie that we wanted to see again, even though everybody was telling us, dude, that's so out of style, nobody does that anymore, and like, blah, blah, blah. And now, all of a sudden, there's like literally an army worldwide of Victor Crowley fans, and this time we were working for them. And that was very different, because normally I like to do independent movies, and I kind of have skirted the studio system up until recently because I don't want somebody else telling me what to do. But this time, the fans were kind of our boss. And as cliche as it sounds, everybody on the crew, because the exact same crew came back to do the second one, which I don't think has ever happened before in a slasher movie. But they were always thinking, well, what do the fans want? What do the fans want? And something that made it easier was that we had set up the sequel before we made the first one. So we already knew everything that was going to happen in this one. And even some of Victor Crowley's weapons that he uses in this one, if you go back and watch the first one, you can see them in the shed, like in various places. Like, we really, really, really had this planned out. So the tough thing, though, to be completely honest, was when you have a movie, when you're shooting Hatchet 2 and at the same time you have a movie in Sundance that people are fainting at and throwing up on themselves in the audience, and the New York Times and Gene Shalit and Everton Roper are all going nuts over it while you're making Hatchet 2, there's a little bit of you got to check your ego at the door a little bit and be like, guys, this is not Frozen. Like, this is Hatchet 2, and we made the movie that is what people who like the first one want. And it's even like the lighting. There were actually times, when, not that we tried to light it worse or something, but Will and I would get something going, and I'm like, dude, this doesn't feel like the first movie at all anymore, and we would change it and try to make it feel like the first movie did. And I think, and so far, based on the reactions, we did a good job with that, because people really feel like it almost feels like you put down a book, because the way the other one ended, it was just this abrupt cut to black. And then this one starts on the same frame that one ended on, and you're right back in it, and it feels
right.
like the same movie, but it's just better. We had more time. We had more things to play with. The kills are better. There's more kills, and there's way more of a story in this one than there was in the first one. So I think we did a good job, and you know, it's always going to come down to preference, especially with horror, because there's the fanatics that are like, nah, man, the original. And I never understand that. Like with Friday the 13th, for instance, people are like, nah, the original. Whoever watches the first one? Nobody. The Jason's not even in it. It's like, you're sitting around with your friends. You're not going to be like, let's watch the first one. Nobody watches the first one. So I really think that this is better than the first one. And we all do. Like the cast, everybody, we were very, very excited about it.
Well, you've created, when I think of great horror villains, you know, there's obviously Jason and Freddy, and you know, there's a kind of a limited library of them, the really memorable ones, and in Victor
and
Crowley.
And how sad is that? Like, where did the villains go? All of a sudden, like, we hit the 90s, and horror, which, like, the basis of horror is a villain, it's a bad guy, it's like a monster, something, and it all went away, and that's why I did this.
And now...
What do we have? We have Jigsaw.
Well, that's this thing. 21st century, but I hate Jigsaw. No offense.
I have a real big place in my heart for Saw, for the first one especially, and I feel like it was unrightfully put in the torture porn thing, the original Saw, because it was more of a mystery and it wasn't very violent, but people think they remember it being this visceral thing, and I think James Wan is just incredible. But there's no more villains. We have like Jigsaw and we have Victor Crowley. Like Jigsaw gets 3,000 screens and 50 million of marketing every time he comes out. I get fucking 60 screens, the ratings board coming after me, and like, you know, nothing. But,
well, I want to talk to you about the rating of the film, but in the line of the horror villain, what when you conceive this character, what went into making it memorable?
I think every great villain is all based in the villain's mythology, and you have to have a campfire story, and it's really that simple. If you have somebody who's just killing people for no reason, it doesn't really make sense, and that doesn't become a memorable villain. Now, a movie that I love is High Tension, and I think, the ending, whatever, but the movie is fantastic. However, you would never really want a High Tension 2 or 3, because who really cares about that guy? Like, why is that guy doing it? What's going on? Very effective movie, and I like it a lot. But if you can have a story that even an 8-year-old can sit and tell to their friends very quickly, like Freddy Krueger, for instance, here's a guy, he was a child killer, the parents burned him alive, and now he's back killing them in their dreams. Done. It's so simple. And Victor Crowley's the same way. He was killed by mistake, and now he haunts this area, and you can hear him screaming for his father in the woods. And if you let yourself go there, it is kind of frightening. And with Hatchet especially, I think one of the things that we're very conscious of is, because the tone of the movies is to be fun and have fun and be funny, we also keep that out of Victor Crowley. So there's nothing funny about Victor Crowley. You're never going to see him making jokes or something funny with him in it. If he's there, he's fucking going to kill you. But that was really the fun of this. And then to see the response, like, you know, this was an independent movie made with nothing and championed by just diehard fans, and now you go and do conventions and the autograph line's like 3 hours long, and the people that come through with Victor Crowley tattooed on them and the Hatchet Army tattoos, and how it's affected people, especially a lot of there's a good portion of horror fans that are trying to get the PC word to say it, but there's people that are like deformed, burn victims, people who just live a life that a lot of other people could never relate to or understand. And that's one of the most touching things, I think. At Comic-Con, I was signing for Frozen, but all these Hatchet fans came through. And there was one guy, he looked a lot like Rocky Dennis from Mask. Like really, really deformed. And his mom brought him there, and he'd driven 7 hours to come, and he only wanted to hold my hand and say thank you. And it was just like, it's emotionally overwhelming to know that this person who probably doesn't get that much joy in their life, like, can really relate to this character, not because he wants to kill people or anything like that, but they sympathize with him. And I think that's the other thing. I think Jason had that. I think even Michael Myers to some extent has that. There's a shred of sympathy for them. And I think that works.
Well, you're really kind of pushing the boundaries with this, with Hatchet 2. Was that a goal for you? I mean, when you started putting this together, you had to have known you were going to get major resistance from the MPAA. You must have been prepared for that fight.
Well, after what I went through the first time, which I'm still not over, like it sounds pathetic, but I still have like nightmares about it. I mean, that was the worst. So, you know, people ask you, what was the worst day of your life? And some people have to think, like, my trial against the MPAA was, it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. They had the wrong guy. They were under resistance because of the torture porn and people complaining about where horror was going. And I was the easy target because I had no money to defend myself with. And I was the poor blue collar kid from Boston. And, like, they could get me. And so they went after Hatchett like I've never seen before. And they were calling me a despicable person and all these things. I mean, I just was like, dude, you have the wrong guy. And it was, to go back to my roots of loving Twisted Sister, it was the same thing that Dee Snider went through in the 80s when the PRC went after him. He was not the problem. He didn't even swear. He didn't drink. He didn't do drugs. His songs were about, like, yes, you can, and don't give up. And they went after him, and he was the fall guy. And I kind of feel like the same thing happened to me. So this time around, there was a lot of anger that came into this. And I think that's one of the reasons why these kills are even more brutal than the other ones, because there was just a lot it was a very cathartic thing. And for all of us, for Kane, for myself, we were very angry when we were making this movie. So when he fucks people up, it's like, whatever you saw in the first one, this is like better.
That's really good.
We harnessed it in a positive way, and we did it. But I mean, I knew there was no way that this movie was going to just skate by. So I wanted it to go straight to video. And so did the crew and the cast. We all knew it was going straight to video, and we didn't care. This is a movie that we're making for the fans. It's not going to further my career. Most people are going to call it a step back because it's a sequel. And, oh, but Frozen was so good, and now why is he doing a slasher movie again? But I love it, and I want to do it. And then Dark Sky, who did one of these rare things that you never see in this business, where most people will tell you anything to get you to sign the contract and just do the movie for them, and then they steamroll over you. But with them, they knew how I felt about it, and they said, look, we're going to show it to the ratings board. Let's just see what happens. Maybe we'll get an R because we'd love to go theatrical with this. And I said, fine. So they showed it to the ratings board, and they got an NC-17. So they said, can you try to cut some stuff out? I cut out almost 2 minutes of gore, not 2 minutes of establishing shots or character development, gore. And they still gave me an NC-17. So I was like, dude, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Like, the whole movie's going to be castrated, just like the first one was when it came out. And I don't want to deal with it. It's not worth it. If you guys are going to put it on 3,000 screens and spend $50 million in marketing like the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, fine. But you're not going to do that. And so let's just be honest here.
Right.
And then they started showing it to the theater chains. And then, lo and behold, struck a deal. And this new AMC independent thing was being started. And all of a sudden, they call and they're like, we're going to go unrated. And I mean, this hasn't happened in a quarter of a century.
Yeah, it's huge.
And the hard thing is, though, is the fucking horror fans, like, they better show up for this. I mean, my head is on a chopping block right now. I mean, I'm a marked man by the ratings board. I might never be able to make another movie because of this, because people are going to be afraid to hire me. Because no studio wants to deal with the ratings board. So if they know that the ratings board is out to get you, they're not going to hire you. So I'm very nervous about that. But if we do a high per screen average, if the fans actually turn up and support this, even if it's not playing near them, if they'll just buy a friggin' ticket, because you know
just
they're going to fucking steal it from me, download it anyway, there's no reason not to just buy a matinee ticket for this movie and let your voice be heard. Because you're not going to see Hatchett in the top 10 at the box office. We're not going to make like $1 million theatrically. It just doesn't happen with a movie when you're only on 60 screens. But if that per screen average is high, other people are going to start releasing movies like this. They're not going to be so afraid of the ratings board anymore, and the winds of change will start blowing. So I really hope they turn up, but I've been let down by the fans so many times for all the crying about remakes and complaining.
Yeah.
That's all they go to see.
Still. Yeah.
But your movies, I mean, they thrive on word of mouth. I mean the first Hatchett thrived on word of mouth. We think you're one of the great new voices in the genre.
Yeah.
And so we're here to support you 100%. But I had one more question about the MPAA before I let you go, because I know you're pressed for time. do you stand in front of some kind of committee or something to argue your case? I mean, who the hell are these people?
There's a documentary called "This Film Has Not Yet Been Rated" by Kirby Dick. That is exactly what it is. You're not supposed to know who they are. They don't tell you who they're, what their names are. It's completely a sham. And even when you drop off the DVD for them to see, you put it through a slat in a door, and like two eyes look back, and they don't want anybody to know who they are. And when I went to trial and I said I will not accept this NC-17 rating, it was me against Joan Graves, who was the head of the ratings board at the time. I think she might be gone now. I don't know. I'm just hoping she's dead. And then they bring in 12.
I love you, Adam.
They're bringing in 12 industry representatives. They're supposed to be theater owners and operators, directors, and studio execs. Now, I've worked for every studio at this point. I know everybody in the business. I didn't know one of these people that they brought in, and one of them was in a walker. He was so elderly, he couldn't even climb into his seat. And I'm like, are you serious? And the woman gets up and she says, the following movie is called Hatchet. And the whole room goes, ugh. And I'm like, oh, man. So they show the movie, and there's points in that movie that I know are funny. I don't care who you are. There's a couple points in there that everybody laughs at. And lines will go by, and nobody's laughing. And I'm in the back of the room going, come on! I was so mad. That's how it goes. And you can't win against them, though. And that's why, like, I don't want to fight with them. I don't want to make this, like, a bigger deal than it is. It's just they didn't want to help this movie. We went around them. I found a way. It's a huge victory after what I went through last time. But it's not going to really be a win unless the fans get my back right now. Because if the fans show up, because the ratings board is terrified about this right now. They're threatening the theaters that are putting it out. They're like, you're not being a team player here. You're not supposed to do this. But something big is in the air, and it's about to happen. And it's all in the hands of the fans, and I wish I trusted them more. I wish I could believe in them more, but I just can't, because we hate remakes, and then all they do is go and see remakes. Mm-hmm. Where
you're
the fuck were the fans for Drag Me to Hell? Like, it's ridiculous.
Or Splice. Dropped that one, and they just let that one die, too. It's ridiculous. I appreciate your honesty, Adam. I've always appreciated that on our show. I really appreciate how honest you are.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I'm just a dude making movies, and I'm very lucky to be doing it. And I'm not a leader. I'm not some artist. I'm just a dude who makes movies, and I'm always going to tell it like it is, even though it keeps getting me in trouble. So I just really can shut my mouth. The publicist is looking at me right now like, stop it!
Well, we love your movies, man. And we're rooting for you, and we'll be there opening day, October 1st.
Thank you very much. Try to bring like 8,000 people with you if you can. That would be awesome.
We'll threaten their homes and your families and everything.
We'll kidnap people from their homes and, Thank you, buddy.
Drag them away from the message board where they're writing worst movie ever on whatever remake it is and have them go see this. And they can go on the message board and say worst movie ever for this one. I don't care. Just go. Just see it and hopefully they'll have a good time and laugh.